In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Dear Democrats, by now you've likely heard that evidence was declassified showing that the Obama administration used the intelligence agencies back in 2016 to support Hillary Clinton's political operation to paint candidate Trump with Russia collusion. That's how disinformation works. The disinformation campaign that Hillary was spinning needed some kind of grounding in reality. It's one thing to just make accusations, but the dynamics completely changes when you have an official investigation into your political opponent. That's what the Russia hoax did. But when that didn't work, that hoax then shifted from trying to stop him from being elected to sabotaging the incoming president. This was a direct attack on our elections, on our democratic processes. So, Democrats, should Trump be allowed to do the same if a Democrat gets elected president in 2028? If your answer is no, then this is where you take a stand. No one should be able to do this, and that means uniting to go after the people who did do this and take away the means for any president to sabotage the next ever again. Hold the other side accountable, but you need to hold your own side even more accountable and to higher standards. And if both sides did that, imagine where we'd all be. When it comes to being lied to, there is something in the receiver that makes them willing to believe the lie. In the case of Trump, it's because people have been convinced to hate Trump, but that hate is built on lies. He was never an enemy of this country. He never conspired with the enemies of this country. There have been no end of attacks, personal and political, on him. It's time you stop hating him and start hating the people who lied to you about him. Because right now, there is an open wound in America that needs to be healed. I'd like to welcome now Mike Howell. He is the president of the Oversight Project that focuses on government oversight and accountability. Mike previously served in the Trump administration as chief legal point of contact for congressional oversight at the Department of Homeland Security. He also worked as oversight counsel for the DHS and as senior counsel for the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. Mike, it's great to talk to you today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Before we get into the whole Russia collusion thing, I'd like to spotlight some of your investigations that you guys do there at the Oversight Project there. But let's actually start with an overview of the Oversight Project. How did it get started? How did you get involved? And generally speaking, what do you guys do?
Yeah, so the Oversight Project started in 2022 at the Heritage Foundation. And it's the result of basically, I think, a lot of things missing on the outside. And when I say outside, I mean outside of government. The left has built a really powerful public opinion shaping machine, whether it's through the media, whether it's through, you know, Congress, the intelligence agencies, you go down the list. I think we're seeing that play out. And, you know, the more we learn about the Russia collusion hoax. And so the right really in, you know, middle America has never had that. And so I'm a veteran of congressional oversight on Capitol Hill and then dealing with it on the incoming side in the Trump administration. And I realized this, you know, pretty early on, that it's just an asymmetrical fight. You know, we rely so much on like these congressional committees to do things, and everyone's permanently frustrated that they're not. Meanwhile, the external groups on, you know, the outside tend to focus more on policy advocacy, commentary, writing papers, things like that. And so I decided that that wasn't good enough. And I was at Heritage at the time, and Dr. Kevin Roberts came aboard as our new president, and he is a reinvigorating force, a very aggressive guy, and he basically wanted to do more than just traditional think tank, you know, work lines. And so I told him it would be a great service, I think, to the country if we kind of invested in litigation and investigations. And we went out and we, you know, actually sued for information that Congress wasn't getting. And so he quickly loved that idea, and that's exactly what we did. And over the years, we've basically built a law firm that can litigate at scale and, you know, for much cheaper than these highfalutin white shoe law firms. And then also we brought in an investigative boutique operation that I think separates us from everyone else. And we have former federal law enforcement types, intelligence types, and we make a lot of creative uses of investigative techniques that span the gamut. And I don't think anyone's out there gathering information in the way we are. Mm-mm. And it has borne a lot of fruit. The AutoPen scandal is the one that most people know us for now, but that's us. That's a bunch of dedicated guys sitting around and doing the hard work of pulling back the documents and you know, not taking no for an answer and sticking with it. And so that's what the Oversight Project does. It's a smaller group. And a couple months ago, actually, we became our own independent entity with the support and backing of the Heritage Foundation. So right. it's a new group on its own. And Heritage was extraordinarily generous to set it up and launch us off into the world. So we are now in the constellation of groups that are on the outside, where we're bringing, I think, a much renewed energy, a brashness and aggression, and just a real grit to getting to the bottom of these things. And so that's what we do.
Yeah. Well, I should mention your website, itsyourgov.org. Itsyourgov.org, and we'll link that up on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com. Today's show is 15-30. And I have here, it says, since your launch in 2022, the project has filed over 100,000 Freedom of Information Act requests and more than 100 lawsuits. That's a pretty impressive track record. I'd like to zero in on a couple of these. You guys used cell phone data to track the movement of gunman Thomas Matthew Crooks following the July 13th assassination attempt on then-presidential candidate Donald Trump in Butler. Do you guys have any updates on that?
We don't. Unfortunately, there's a limit to what you can do on the outside. We don't have guns and badges, and so ultimately some of the material that only the government can get at, we can't. But what we did do is we tracked the cell phone activity and the digital activity at his residence, and we found a lot of curious connections there in terms of where the devices that popped, so to speak, in his house were traveling to. One was in Washington, D.C., not too far away from an FBI office.
Yes.
And it just told a story of a lot more movement than I think the media was spinning, as this is some lone gunman shut-in type. And that certainly was not the case. I'll say we're frustrated with the lack of disclosure about it. I think President Trump has been asked about it and spoken about it a few times, where he says he is satisfied with the information that he has received, and the Secret Service is now doing a great job. I'm glad he is satisfied. It's he who got shot, so he deserves to do what he wants with the information. But I will say there's 77 million Americans out there who, you know, voted for this government and are still very concerned about how it was almost taken away by an assassin's bullet that I think deserves some more answers. And so I hope one day we do get those answers. I also do not trust the intelligence community's briefing to President Trump, obviously not having viewed it or taken that briefing myself. But if we're learning anything these days, it's that the intelligence community is they got a big problem. They got a big problem. And I refuse to believe that this is just an isolated lone wolf, radicalized kid. I think there's a lot more to the story. And I think that story needs to be told.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And you had mentioned the AutoPen scandal. I think in some ways it's almost symbolic of what we're seeing here now with the Russian hoax, where there's this oversight that's trying to expose what happened. And yet I just saw recently that in investigating the AutoPen scandal, you guys are running into your own roadblocks where now Republicans are in charge of things, and yet they want to push things off back to September, I saw.
Yep. Yeah, it's very unfortunate. I will say we're very unhappy campers today with the current status of reforms of the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. with Judge Jeanine Pirro at the helm right now. To put it simply, we're seeing the same, if not worse, litigation kind of response to us than we saw in the Biden administration. Hmm. It's frivolous delays and things of that nature, and no real energy towards producing document sets of any meaning or answers. I think it's largely this administration has taken a communications heavy, go on and announce broad-based conclusions, but are failing to actually back it up. And that's a void we're trying to fill, but we can't do that if our own government, that was supposed to be much different than the Biden government, is fighting us at every step of the way. And so that's the pattern we've seen. And I think, Attorney General Bondi will rise or fall by whether she's able to achieve meaningful transparency and accountability. Yes. And I think it's safe to say that she's not getting a good grade on that right now.
Yeah, well, she's certainly not doing what everybody would like to see. You know, we could do an entire show just on some of your investigations. And I really encourage people to visit your website again. That is itsyourgov.org to find out more about what you guys are doing over there and what they can do to help as well. But we do want to zero in on the Russia hoax that has exploded all over the news, or at least some of the news, while the mainstream is doing its best to pretend it didn't happen and there's nothing to see here. All of that coming up with Mike Howell, president of the Oversight Project. And welcome back. We're talking to Mike Howell. He's the president of the Oversight Project. He's a contributor to the Daily Signal, and he's also an attorney. Or do you consider yourself a recovering attorney?
Huh. I wish I was in recovery. Lucky for me, I kind of skipped over several stages of the legal profession and just built a law firm instead of having to be in court all day. And so we have a great team of lawyers that have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. I am just the big smile you see on TV every now and then. All credit goes to the team.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. You know, I think most of our audience is going to know quite a bit already about the Russia hoax. So I don't think we need to spend a tremendous amount of time recapping things and what happened. But, you know, some little bits here and there before we get going on where things are all headed from here. But before we dig into the Russia hoax, I looked through your list of investigations on the Oversight Project's website. That's itsyourgov.org. And unless I missed it, I don't see an investigation specifically related to the Russia hoax. Are you guys going to be launching your own investigation into that or some aspect of it? Because personally, I would really like to know what the heck John Durham was up to, because it was clearly not about investigating with the goal of holding people accountable, but seemed more about providing cover for the people responsible and for shielding the agency from all of its wrongdoing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've done a ton of work on the Russia hoax, and the Russia hoax is not something that you can understand in just one neat category. It spans a very long time and it spans a lot of people The same kind of weaponized activity. And so there are layers on layers on this ugly, funky onion. We have done a ton of work recently, and if you're on X, go to itsyourgov. That's our X feed. And just real quick note, we go by Oversight Project. It's your government, because guess what? It is your government. People forget that people are sovereign, and the documents we seek belong to you. We're out there fighting to return them to you. And these people work for us and you. And so we need to treat the government that way. That's why we investigate it the way we do, to have an informed citizenry. But back to the Russia hoax. A lot of our work over the years is focused on the FBI. And a lot of the people who were involved at a functional level, the FBI, everyone's familiar with Wray and Comey and stuff, but in terms of the people pushing the paper, are still at the FBI. And so we have been a very loud voice calling for substantial reform of the FBI that is opposite of what the Trump administration has declared. They've declared the FBI problem has been solved. We know for a fact that it has not, and we've been pointing to data points and investigative findings that relate to that over, you know, the last few months. And of course, we were doing this during the Biden administration as well. And so we, by virtue of kind of the composition of our team, there's a lot of expertise into federal law enforcement and the intelligence community. And so those weaponization threads are things we've been pulling on for years.
Well, as far as the start of the Russia hoax, up until recently, I have not seen a lot of coverage, in fact, hardly any at all, about the evidence that we've had for years now. It's what amounts to a signed confession from John Brennan. We have his handwritten notes from a White House meeting with Obama, Biden, Comey, who was the head of the FBI at the time, James Clapper, he was the head of the DNI, Susan Rice, and a few others from July of 2016. In those handwritten notes, he disclosed to the others at that meeting that the CIA had learned from the Russians, no less, that Hillary planned to smear Trump with Russia collusion. To me, the entire Russia hoax starts with those handwritten notes, especially since 3 days after that meeting, knowing full well it was a hoax and a political operation, James Comey then opened the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation into Trump, giving them the legal parameters to then spy on Trump's campaign. I mean, to me, that Brennan handwritten note, that should have been on page one of the Durham report. Here is the initial lie, and everything that followed from that was a result of this lie.
Yep, you're absolutely right. I mean, they twisted themselves into absolute pretzels to justify this. And in doing so, they, you know, wrote some of it down. And so many of these investigations rely on actual written materials. We're never going to get the full breadth of what the actual conversation was like. But it's clear as day in the writings there that have been put out.
Well, as an attorney, isn't that kind of the whole fruit of the poisonous tree thing?
It absolutely is. And so it depends what kind of legal theory we like to discuss here. On the accountability end, it absolutely is where you kind of start peeling back the many layers. It's where they begin to twist and turn the awesome powers of the federal government to target someone for political ends. And it wasn't the only instance, but this is the biggest instance and the biggest kind of fact pattern that we have. The Russia hoax drove so much. And it all was cooked up. And so the beauty of that, so to speak, is you have things called statutes of limitations, time periods in which you have to prosecute crimes or else you can't wait too long. They go stale and you can't charge. But since they built that foundation of a lie back in 2016, you know, they took additional steps over the course of the intervening years to build on that initial lie, which then does something which basically eviscerates the statute of limitations. And so when you rely on that original lie, that was 2016, and keep going from there up until, in some ways, really close to present day, you're continuing the same crime. And I think that's going to be the subject of a lot of intense discussion and hopefully prosecution, is what is the criminal legal theory that applies to this stuff?
Well, I'd like to come back around to the whole where does this go type thing, and especially this potential charge of treason. I know that Trump and even Tulsi Gabbard have kind of thrown that word around. But yet, before we get there, while the mainstream media is doing its best to ignore this, these latest revelations, and when they're not ignoring it, they're trying to mischaracterize it, no doubt to absolve themselves of any wrongdoing. One of the things I have heard discussed by, I think, the more legitimate media is, why didn't the first Trump administration expose all of this when they had the chance back before 2020? Any thoughts on that, looking back at it all?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. These were documents in their custody and control that they could have obtained. I think you had a lot of very unfortunate appointments in the first Trump administration.
Yes,
and I think they were just taking so much incoming that it was difficult for them. You know, they were under constant siege. And so I think a lot of the lessons of the, you know, hiccups in the first Trump administration have been learned by the second one.
Yes.
And they're kind of solving for that. I also think the current environment in which a lot of people who voted for President Trump are frustrated with the state of accountability.
Yes.
And, you know, reforms led to them basically emptying the chamber, so to speak. Whatever we got, let's get it out and let's move on it. And so this was part of that category. And while it's an important part of the whole story, I'll remind folks that we already largely knew that the Russia hoax was a setup. This is another data point and confirmation of this. It's captured a lot of national attention, but it's not new totally. The data point's new, but we already generally knew that and so much more. And so that's why I think it's gotten so much attention and so much push, is because people are so upset on other areas, you know, like the Epstein files or what have you. And so you see a frantic energy in the administration to kind of make good and deliver something. And that's what this is.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, it's time for a break. We are digging into the Russia hoax today. A lot more ground to cover about the current investigation, whistleblowers. Where does this all go from here? Is it treason? And when we finally get to people actually being held accountable? America was founded on the principle that in order to preserve freedom, government should be responsible, accountable, and transparent to its citizens. The Oversight Project works to expose and root out corruption in government, elected officials, and in America's most influential organizations to ensure power resides with the American people. And we're talking to the president of that organization, Mike Howell. And so, Mike, as far as this current investigation is going, and based on the documents that we have seen so far from Tulsi Gabbard, is it accurate to say that Obama did, in fact, give the order to push the Russia hoax to try to torpedo the Trump campaign, and when Trump got elected, in spite of it, to sabotage the incoming Trump administration? And the reason I ask that is because in the emails and the documents that have been declassified so far, I kept seeing phrases like POTUS tasking used multiple times. Does that definitively mean directly from the president that, yes, he, in fact, ordered it, or could it loosely refer to just someone in his office? And the same question for a phrase like per the president's request. Again, is that definitively Obama or someone in his circle who is designated to be running this particular op? And in other words, is this the proverbial plausible deniability, or is Obama's goose finally cooked?
Yeah, good question. I think it'd be a hard row for Obama to toe to try to say that his senior most advisor saying that he ordered something was inaccurate or somehow something else. You know, like, I guess theoretically he could argue that, but I think it's a laughable argument. So it is accurate to say in more ways than one that Obama did directly give the order. Also, it might not even be necessary, even though it's true, because he is the president of the United States. He's in charge. He is the person from which all authority to do anything in the executive branch flows. And so there's no way he's getting out of this, you know, pickle that he's in. He's directly wrapped up in this. He clearly continued to rely and promote either implicitly or explicitly the lies that he propagated. And he will go down in history as somebody did something that no other president did to thwart his successor. And I think that's really important in the context of the history we've lived in over the past 10 years, where people have tried to frame President Trump as somehow being a threat to democracy, who yes. blew January 6th way out of proportion, as worse than the Civil War and 9/11. No, it wasn't. In fact, this, what Obama did is many degrees more serious and worse than a protest that got out of hand. And yes. so it's incumbent, I think, on historians and teachers and others to not really treat this. There will be an instinct to say, oh, Obama's a Democrat. He was a good guy. Like, I don't want to defend him. But we need to put people in America in the proper context. And that for Obama is doing something that no other president did that was very much against the national interest. And it is an absolutely awful thing.
Yeah, well, it absolutely is. And plus, it was just an open defiance of democracy, something Democrats constantly say they are trying to defend. I mean, it was a rejection of the duly elected president and sabotaging him. I recognize that the Oversight Project is not an arm of law enforcement or the Justice Department itself. But if Mike Howell and the Oversight Project were investigating the Russia hoax, what would you be doing? And would that be different than what the DOJ is currently doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the DOJ is currently doing, if anything, to be honest with you. I know Tulsi Gabbard referred it to the DOJ, but that doesn't mean that the DOJ is chasing us full bore. In fact, I bet you there's some acrimony between Tulsi and the head of DOJ, Pam Bondi, because Tulsi had this bombastic, you know, disclosure and threw it over on Pam Bondi's desk where people are expecting action. And right now that desk is about to crater and crumble with all the action that's needed that's sitting on it. And so it's one more thing that expectations have been raised. And that's how we got into this mess.
Yeah.
Cash or checks were, you know, promised without the funds to cash them. And that's the story of the Epstein, story of everything else. And the real political danger here is if she does not deliver on this, it's another dramatic example and a string now of building examples. And so I bet they weren't too thrilled to have expectations once again thrown on them. But such is the price of leadership. And this is what was campaigned on by the president to you know, end the weaponization. And so that's kind of the job description. It's, it takes a brave soul to do that. And I hope she does live up and cash these checks. But right now, it doesn't seem to be going that way.
Well, I know a lot of people are frustrated with her. I know that she's got an awful lot on her desk already. We're only 6 months into this, and she's got some major issues happening here. Can the president or should the president appoint some kind of special counsel to investigate that? Or is there somebody within, you know, under Pam Bondi that you would like to see investigating this?
Yeah, there have been a lot of discussions about what form such a thing can take. I know Senators Cornyn and Graham wrote a letter today saying they should appoint a special prosecutor. To me, I think, you know, when big things happen like this, there's always an energy to like offload the responsibility and the burden of actually having to do the work.
Yeah.
And so it's really just a form and a personnel type deal. So what are the advantages to a special prosecutor versus just DOJ investigating it as they should investigate crime? It's hard to think of really what they are. I mean, there's some jurisdictional things and flexibilities, but nothing that DOJ inherently can't do. You get another person and you know, budget and things like that, but DOJ could do that internally too. And so I do think they might prefer this special prosecutor route because then it's, you can point at, hey, that guy's doing it. Don't ask me about it. But at the end of the day, they all work for the same government and the same administration. And so it's just about burden shifting. What I think they should be doing instead is, this is a problem in every political administration, but it's profound here because they inherited such a mess. Cabinet secretaries have things they want to execute on. They want to be looking forward and executing on their priorities, defining their legacy, and not looking backwards to investigate what the last guy did. There's a lot of reasons why they want to do that. It's hard. First off, it takes, I know, because we started an oversight project and got 12 to, you know, 15 guys reading documents and investigating all day. It's not glamorous. It's roll up your sleeves and bang your head against the wall type work. And you know, cabinet secretary and their senior staff don't want to be doing that. That's why they basically just ask other people to go gather documents for them. And they just stare at them and hope something pops out on them. That's not how it works, though, to get good findings. And so I've long suggested that President Trump should basically appoint a massive government-wide kind of special commission with a special commissioner to really do this stuff.
Kind of like
there's political.
Kind of like the Church Commission. Is that what you have in mind there?
Kind of. The Church Commission was a creature of Congress. And so you would want this executive branch wants to have guns and badges and broad kind of authorities to go out and prosecute people or give people immunity to cooperate if needed, funds for restitution, walk-in rights, basically the master law against every government like information system there is. But the problem with that is the no cabinet secretary, despite them not wanting to do these things, everyone wants to give away authority and the shine that comes from those things. Everyone wants to be the person at the podium talking about. They want to show up for the award ceremony even though they missed the race. And until we square that circle, I think people are just going to continue to be frustrated. It's a process breakdown too. It's time, it's review, everyone needs to approve. It's really not glamorous work. It takes a sick person to love this type of work, but there are sick people out there, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, well, and that's good. That's what we need. Exactly right. So, all right, it is time for a break. Coming back, I want to talk to you about whistleblowers. We're talking with Mike Hollow. He's the president of the Oversight Project. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is Dash Fire Radio Show. We're talking today to Mike Howell. He is the president of the Oversight Project. You can visit them and find out about the great work that they are doing and some of their investigations at itsyourgov.org. Itsyourgov.org. And we'll link that up on today's show page again at 15-30 on iSpyRadio.com. And so I want to talk to you, get your thoughts on these whistleblowers, because one of the things that Tulsi Gabbard has said is that these whistleblowers are coming out of the woodwork, and that's nice and all, but it makes me want to scream, where the flippin' heck were you 9 years ago to stop this from even getting off the ground?
Yeah. A lot of missing in action, right?
Yeah.
We'll see in terms of what these whistleblowers have. I mean, ideally what they have is documents and contemporaneous testimony and things like that. And also evidence that spans more into recent history and within the statute of limitations. That's what I really hope to see. Hmm. And if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the statute of limitations.
Sure. I was going to ask you that. So go ahead.
We've talked about, you know, the political environment and kind of my I guess jaded view of how things are proceeding. But here's kind of evidence that supports what I've just said over our last couple of segments. We referred at the Oversight Project Christopher Wray for lying to Congress, and which is a crime, USC 1001. And that is within the statute of limitations because he did it recently. It's within the 5 years. The FBI hasn't acknowledged or accepted our criminal referral. Yet everyone's celebrating the conduct outside the statute of limitations and saying they're acting on it. And so what I think's happening is they know they're not going to be able to successfully prosecute these things, and they can use the statute of limitations as an excuse. And if that were not the case, then why not charge the clearer case of Christopher Wray where you don't have that issue? And so I worry, you know, beyond just worry, I think that is the play right now. And so I see a lot of people acting as if President Obama is going to be charged. And I worry that, you know, instead of cashing the checks that were already written, they're writing even bigger checks that we all know cannot be cashed. And I think that could have tremendous political damage and credibility damage. There's a lot of people with big platforms acting and rallying up the base as if this absolutely will happen. And it's kind of like this joint psychosis of everybody wanting so badly to repair the damage from the Epstein files. They will believe and say anything to get things back on. But it's like any addiction, you know, it just gets worse when you double down and double down. And we're like in a death spiral of accountability here. And that's what, you know, the Oversight Project, we're fairly independent minded. Like, we are unabashed conservatives, don't get me wrong, but we're not political creatures. I mean, I frankly, kind of politics disgust me in a lot of ways. I've lived it up close for so long, and I want nothing to do with it. And so we have an independence in which, you know, in this sea of, if you say this, we're not going to like you. You can't come to the cocktail party. How dare you say something against President Trump? But we can call balls and strikes. And I voted for President Trump at every single opportunity over his entire last decade. I support him more than I've supported any other politician or president, and I still do. And I do so much that I think it is burdened. It is incumbent on me as a leader of this organization to try to save for the incoming damage that I see happening. This legacy-defining damage that could happen. And that requires an honest, an uncomfortable honesty at this moment in time. because it's not going to get better by everyone just being stupid at the same time. And that's kind of what I see happening.
Well, that's kind of the definition of Congress. Everybody's stupid at the same time.
So. Yes.
I'd like to circle back around to the whistleblowers, because I know that, as you know, the Oversight Project, I'm sure you guys deal with whistleblowers all the time. Can you give us any insight on whistleblowers, and why would they only come forward now?
Yeah, whistleblowing is tough. Look, the guys who blew the whistle on the FBI are still out of jobs, you know, after they were promised they'd be taken care of. I've worked with whistleblowers a very long time, and there's tremendous risk to whistleblowing. A lot of people would like to say, you come forward, you're protected, the law protects you. But that's not how it works in practice. It requires tremendous risk, which very often just comes down to somebody having a moral conviction to withstand the punishment that'll come along with sharing information. And so I think that's probably, people feel now that the administration has, you know, let into this, it is a safer environment for them to come forward. And I would expect that prior, people didn't think it was worth ruining their life over.
Well, America needs people of courage, and we need people willing to run into burning buildings. And right now, it because they're coming out now, it feels like they are afraid they might get caught up in all of this and exposed. So it's better to come forward now. It's CYA in the CIA and FBI and the rest. If they had come forward before when this happened and not when they have to, that would make them a lot more trustworthy. But at least they're coming forward, and I guess that's something. Okay, let's actually take a break a little bit early. Coming back, I want to talk about that whole treason thing, because I don't want that to get lost in discussion here and run out of time. So we'll deal with that next, and then finish up with, where does this all go from here? Everyone stay with us. More with Mike Howell. He's the president of the Oversight Project. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Mike Howell. He's the president of the Oversight Project. You can find out more about them at itsyourgov.org. And we'll link that up on today's show page 15-30 on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Mike, I'd like to get into the whole treason thing, because a lot of people are hearing this word thrown around somewhat loosely. You know, Trump is not always exactly the most precise communicator, and it's more about getting noticed, I think. But I've also heard Tulsi Gabbard say this as well. So as far as treason is concerned, do you think that this rises to the level of treason?
No, and that's not to diminish how terrible it is. And I'll explain why, but really quick, if you're super interested in this topic and listening, there's a terrific book on this very thing. It's called On Treason. My father, who knows me too well, got me this book 5-6 years ago for Christmas. And it's a law professor who walks through what is treason, what is not, and the history of the statute and the applications of it. And here's what I learned from that book. And I don't know this guy's politics. He could be a liberal. He could be crazy. He could be a communist, for all I know. I don't know, but I do know the book is good. Treason is one of the only crimes defined in the Constitution. You know, it's not from a criminal statute. So it's in a very, very special category of constitutionally defined crime, which basically requires two things. It's somebody is you either attack the U.S. or you help someone who's doing it. An enemy is defined as, you know, terms of war. And so who in this fact pattern would be the enemy? Who is at war with the United States? It was the president of the United States, like it or not. It's also not physical in nature, right? It's there, you, good luck making a claim that this is an act of war and it's in furtherance of it. And so it just doesn't fit what treason has been used, how it's been used before, and how it's defined in the Constitution. And trust me, like I think what they did is abominable and one of the worst things this country's ever seen. I just don't think you're going to get that far charging it under treason. And there's a reason why Tulsi Gabbard used lowercase t and said treasonous as an adjective, because, you know, we've abused this term in public to express kind of moral outrage of, you know, to mean what it's colloquially understood to mean, which is different than what it's legally understood. And so they're not going to get anywhere on it. And I don't think DOJ would ever push on it, or any lawyer who didn't want to get sanctioned, you know, by the court would even try to move forward with it, because I think it's that far across the, not even close to the line. There are other statutes at play, though. Don't get me wrong. Like, this is still terrible and should be prosecuted fully.
Sure.
But you're looking at civil rights violations. Ultimately, this is the violation of President Trump's civil rights. And it has, these types of cases have been prosecuted before. You're looking at things that relate to the use of classified information, certain kind of political interference type statutes. There's also other loyalty, adjacent statutes that kind of would get at what people viscerally understand treason to mean, seditious conspiracy and whatnot. And so when the legal theory finally emerges of what they could prosecute, I just, don't think treason's going to be the one they go with.
Hmm. Well, you are definitely agreeing with Hans von Spakovsky, one of your colleagues there at the Heritage Foundation, and he also argues in his article, "Could Obama be prosecuted over the Russian hoax? A look at the law," and that's up on the Daily Signal, and again, we'll put that up in the show notes section on 15-30. He also argues that treason would be a real stretch, and he doesn't see it happening either. Although it was interesting in that article, he cites a recent SCOTUS case, Fisher versus U.S., if I remember correctly, which held that prosecution requires showing a defendant impaired the availability or integrity of documents used in an official proceeding, which includes creating false evidence, and that false evidence became part of an official investigation. So that might be something. What are your thoughts on that end of things?
Well, my first thoughts is Hans von Spakovsky is one of the most intelligent and also the greatest guys I've ever come to know over the years. And if he said it, I believe it. I mean, hearing it now for the first time without doing him the solid of actually reading what he wrote, he's going back to basically the January 6th cases, which is what the Fisher case is about, where they tried charging them with a little known statute called obstruction of an official proceedings, which relate to basically document crimes. So it goes back to like the Enron case of if you're destroying documents during an investigation, that's obviously illegal. That's how the statute is used. They tried to use it against January 6th defendants by saying the obstructed an official proceeding being the political or the official events on January 6th. It was a huge stretch. It got a lot of people in jail for a long time, caused a lot of damage. Everyone knew it would never hold up at the Supreme Court. They did it anyway, so the Supreme Court tossed it. And so Hans is going to the language that was used in discussing how the statute should properly be used. And I think he's pointing into, we just devoted all this Supreme Court legal time and attention to delineating what the statute can be used for. That's document-based crimes, like meant to obstruct other governmental actions. And he has discovered, and this is genius, actually, the more I think about it, that, hey, what Obama did actually meets what the Supreme Court was saying when they were trying to narrow the appropriate usages of that statute. And so that is a great find by him, and I think a great point.
Hmm. Well, as far as the whole presidential immunity end of things, the left went apoplectic when the Supreme Court ruled in Trump's favor on that. They claimed it gave the president unlimited power to do anything, even kill people. That was the start of this whole stupid no kings garbage that gullible people on the left swallowed wholesale. The irony that that ruling might somehow now protect Obama is just off the scale. But how do you claim that it's a presidential duty to sabotage a political opponent or an incoming president? I mean, where in the Constitution is that power enumerated?
Yeah, and this is what the debate was all about. What counts is within the scope of presidential activity? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, some will argue, well, of course, dealing with intelligence matters and things like that, even if you don't like how they were dealt with, is squarely in the presidential authority. That'll be a strong argument to overcome. And the countervailing argument is, no, this was at the outset purely for political activities and abusive in nature at the conception stage. And so that's who the legal fight will be.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, real quick, do you think that people will be held responsible? And what does that look like? Are we talking jail, actual fines? What do you think?
No, I unfortunately don't. I think it is very possible. And I think the way to increase the likelihood of it is having conversations like we're having, so that people can understand what the government could do and is not doing. In other words, to see through the, bullcrap at times, pardon my French, or if that's even counts as French, because that's the only thing that moves politicians in my experience, is when enough people know what they're, can pick apart what they're saying. I think the public has gotten really wise on this in recent years, particularly with X and social media. Where they can, Congress sends a letter or something and they go, oh, cool, another letter. Where are you going to get? What are you going to get for us? The same thing goes for kind of the executive branch of the administration. And so if people are informed enough to demand that the administration take certain actions or prosecute this or here's how you could do it, the likelihood of them actually doing it goes way up. But as things stand right now, this administration just has not, for better or for worse, devoted political capital to the accountability issue. I think there might be more transparency But we're not seeing accountability. In fact, you look at the FBI, President Trump saying it's completely fixed just because there's a couple new political appointees at the top. I think that's just that that's our standard for accountability. How can we hope for accountability elsewhere? I think we'll see rebranding. I think we'll see marketing around the rebranding. But until people, you know, really voice their objections, I don't think we're going to see accountability.
Well, I would certainly hope we see something on that end. But we'll talk about that in the final segment here on iSpy Radio. We're talking today to Mike Howell about the Russian hoax. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now with Mike Howell. He's the president of the Oversight Project. You can find out more about them by heading to itsyourgov.org. That's itsyourgov.org and find out some of the great investigations they are doing on your behalf to hold government accountable, which is exactly how it should be. As far as where this goes from here, because this is just what we've seen so far is just one web of many, and each thread of that web spawned other webs as well. And we've got a lot of people that are involved still. The media, I think, ought to be held accountable. You've got foreign agencies that were involved in spinning this hoax. You've got foreign agents that were involved, you know, the whole Five Eyes things. So is there any chance of holding any of them accountable?
There is. And I think the way to really do it first, let's talk about the media for a moment. Some of your viewers may remember Operation Mockingbird, which was when it was discovered how the CIA and other intelligence agencies planted and paid off journalists at all the major places that you would think of to basically parrot, you know, media or, you know, intelligence agency narratives. And I don't think that program ever died. I think it evolves. And I think it evolved in the current context in that you have reporters at the New York Times, et cetera, Washington Post, who are just extensions of the government agencies. And so I make that point to say we need to not view, quote unquote, media always as journalism. The First Amendment prism through which people intuitively want to apply to this does not apply. It's basically governmental action through, you know, these supposed independent entities. And so that's an important wall to break down. And I'm a First Amendment absolutist, really. I think it's very important. I think it's very misunderstood. But I do not see a First Amendment defense for some quote unquote journalists working to propagate misinformation out there at the behest of the intelligence community. And so, yes, those people who played a role in it should be prosecuted for the role in any crimes committed. More broadly speaking, we need systemic accountability as well. Of course, there should be individual accountability. But it was JFK who said the intelligence agencies should be, CIA particularly, you know, smashed into 1,000 pieces and shattered into the winds.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think our intelligence agencies are really fixable. And I think it's an open question right now over the course of their history, whether they've done more harm than good. And so it's not good enough for me just to see a new director. I have nothing bad to say about Ratcliffe. Sure, he's a great guy. Known him to be a great guy, actually, in my very few interactions with him. My beef's with the entity, the system. And I hope they do shatter, you know, at least parts of it to a million pieces and spread it through the wind.
Well, one of the things else that von Spakovsky mentions in that article is, and again, he does not have much hope either that anybody's going to be prosecuted for this, but does think that guardrails could be put in place to stop this from ever happening again. But since so much of this happened in secret and behind closed doors, how could you possibly enforce that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And this is the fundamental flaw, as you want to call it, or what the entire constitutional theory and law and order in the United States hinges on. The thing that is a priori to the Constitution itself is that it assumes men of character, of leadership, and of good faith will actually adhere to what's in the text, and in both in spirit and in letter. It doesn't work when you have leaders who don't have that. And I unfortunately think that's what we have. Particularly, I think the Democratic Party is gone. I think they should have no public trust whatsoever moving forward. And that's what we saw not only with Obama, but the auto pen scandal. They functioned for 4 years without a presidency, and it's specifically in violation of the Constitution. The entire system was out of order with the most simple of the constitutional instructions. And it's because we did not have leaders of character and honesty and patriotism. They preferred an incapacitated president. And in the case of Obama, they preferred to spin the country into an absolute frenzy over sure. over a hoax
sure.
than to lose well, to Donald Trump.
That's classic Marxism, divide and conquer. Get people angry at each other and keep them angry at each other over differences like race or income rather than what they ought to be, which is united in their anger at the government, especially under Marxism. It's all about control. You know, there are just so many people, key players involved in all this. I would love to see justice for John Brennan. I just can't stand that guy. James Comey, Clapper, Victoria Nuland. But you also had members of Congress who knew about this and knew that this was a lie and pushed it in public anyway. I know your friend Adam Schiff probably ought to be held accountable.
Yes, he should. For the problem with him is picking which crime. He has a pardon for his J6 activities, but as I told him and his colleagues when I testified, that his pardon's no good because it was signed by the auto pen.
Well, if no one is held accountable, doesn't this just mean that this is all going to happen again? I mean, what's to stop Trump right now from sabotaging the next incoming president if it might be a Democrat?
Yep. Good question. Obviously, yes, if you don't hold people accountable, it happens again, and it doesn't happen again in the same form. It happens in a worse form. That's the story. I mean, if you look at what Hillary and Bill Clinton got away with, it led to directly to what Biden tried doing with his family or did do with his pay-to-play scheme, or in how Obama's kind of monetized the post-presidential office and, you know, made money off of interfering and things like this and just corruption. It all goes back to not holding the Clinton Foundation accountable. It's why you end up with Hunter Biden running yeah. around selling access to the White House.
Yeah. Isn't that just disgusting? You know what? If you never lock the safe and never have armed guards, people are just going to keep robbing the bank. And unfortunately, if we can't hold people responsible, that's where we're going to end up. Mike Howell, president of the Oversight Project. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock today. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not willing to let Obama off the hook just yet. We might not be able to get him for treason, but using the presidency and intelligence agencies to attack your political rivals simply cannot be entirely above the law. If it was, other presidents would have done it before Obama. And Trump has some pretty brilliant people around him, so if there's a legal needle to thread, I believe he can find a way to do it. I truly hope, though, that this is the start of a new day in America, where the American people become excited about holding every public official accountable, that we won't stop at this Russian hoax, but continue to dig deeper. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.